Helwell Contour, the fail in rifles. Fangs for licensing Torpu cost. Oh, God, hang on. I've left my glasses outside. Johnny?
Yeah?
Can you pass me my glasses?
Yeah, there you go.
Thanks, love. Right. Yeah, that makes more sense. Welcome to The Failing Writers. Thanks for listening to our podcast.
Right, what's the plan for this podcast then, John?
Well, should we just go for it and see what happens?
Yeah, we're gonna...
You've done your personality things, haven't you? So we've got stuff to talk about.
Got a few bits.
Yeah, we need to do a bit of a competition is now open sort of thing, don't we?
I think so.
Yeah.
Remember, we need to be excited right from the start. That's the way these things work. We need to get ourselves pumped up. Yeah, all right.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
I don't really do excitement, do I? That's Dave's.
Oh, come on.
No, that's Dave's thing, because he can do really high-pitched talking when he gets excited.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Okay.
Let's be excited.
Is Dave going to get so excited that only dogs are going to enter our competition?
It could be. Hi, everyone.
Well, sorry, were you doing a voice then, Dave?
Right. Come on, let's be excited about this.
So why are we excited? Why are we excited? There's a very good reason for our excitement. We're now into the actual competition.
Yes, the competition is live.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and I tell you, the number of entries we've had in, goodness me.
Yeah.
To be fair, it is early days.
It is early days.
We've literally had some entries.
Do you know what, though? Now is a really brilliant time to get your entry in. Get it in early before everyone else.
Yep.
And then we've got time to pore over it. Because let's face it, on the last day, when there's like a ton of them come through and you're reading loads of them.
With the best will in the world, you're not
really reading them with quite the same deference as you might when you've got loads of time, are you? So,
yeah, I'll probably just choose the first one I read and then I won't have to read the rest. So
get them in early. It'll help us out as well, to be fair.
Yeah.
So there you go.
We should remind people, shouldn't we? They might not have listened. They might have happened onto us this episode. Going, what you're on about? It's our annual flash fiction competition, 500 words or less, or fewer, whichever grammar pedants want to latch onto. Although less is still technically correct, but let's not get started on that. It's about love as a broad theme, and you have to include the phrase.
No, don't say it, Tom. You have to listen to last week's episode to get the phrase. That's how it works.
No, but it would have already... it doesn't matter now. No,
it does matter, because that's how it's... You know, there'll be people going, hang on, I had to listen to that episode. Now that it's in this
one
as well.
Episodes.
I don't want to listen to more than one episode of The Failing Writers.
Yeah, no, you've got to listen to season 2, episode 19.
Listeners,
I'm sorry,
Dave's
I'm drawing the line. Out. Yeah.
Gosh.
Those are the rules.
We were just talking about pedants as well.
Well,
so tune in last week.
Soft as a kiss. That's the phrase.
Tune in last week
to find out what the phrase is.
There's £300 up for grabs.
And copies of the writing software Scrivener.
Which is exceptionally good. Exceptionally good.
Given to us by our partners, Scrivener.
Yeah, I'd posted on some forums before about the competition to get, you know, let people know, what have you.
Yeah.
And one of the first replies that came back was just, oh, yeah, I use Scrivener. It's brilliant, isn't it?
Mm. So, it's good.
Yeah, it is brilliant.
They probably don't need another copy then.
Well worth getting. Oh, we should mention as well, it's a good time to mention, if you go onto their website, literatureandlatte.com, and use the code FAILING, and you get 20% off your purchase. So you too can use Scrivener to help you write the next best-selling novel.
Yeah.
Asterix, that's not guaranteed.
No. Wonderful prizes, wonderful competition. Get your entries in now.
But it's at about this time in an episode that we would like to look Daveward and see what segue he has to gently meander us into the next section of the show. Dave, what do you have for us today?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, if you're planning on entering our competition and you're thinking, I think my story might have to have some characters in it.
A lot of stories do these days, don't they?
A lot of stories do, in 2022.
It's a real trend.
But instead of just, you know, just throwing some meaningless characters in, you want them to be real. You want them to be, you know, authentic, proper characters. So we thought we'd give you a little bit of help, a few little tips to help create believable characters. And John has come up with a wonderful little thing.
I have. To give you a bit of background on the thing and why, because it might seem a bit random, but I've just been away on holiday with a bunch of friends and families, and we got talking about personality types and how different we all are, but yet still managed to get on. And my son was talking about the 16 personality quiz you can do online, which is a sort of take on the Myers-Briggs test, if you've ever heard of that. And I'll be honest, when everyone did it, I was quite surprised just how accurate they were and how they were all quite different as well. And I know you've got some misgivings about these kinds of things, haven't you, Tom? You've done a Myers-Briggs. Was that a company you ended up working for, or for one that you?
During a leadership development program. Right. Company.
Do you want to tell us more about that, just for the sake of balance?
No, it's just we kind of did it, and my gut instinct, as it is with most things, is that it was a bit shaky and a little bit woo-woo kind of psychology stuff. And I did psychology at A level. I enjoy the subject, which is maybe why I was sort of looking to delve into it a bit deeper. And I think and reading about it later, there is a lot of stuff that it perhaps isn't that accurate, and a lot of the stuff does involve what they call Barnum statements, which are things that seem very specific but do apply broadly to a lot of people. It's the same kind of stuff that a cold reader would use, one of these psychics that's going, is anyone with a B, Bertie, and you kind of ignore the negatives and you focus on the things that, it's like with that dude last week that you were on about, oh, John Randy's dead similar just because he dresses up as a fairy sumo wrestler or whatever.
Yeah, as soon as you start looking for the things that, you want to be true.
Yeah, you find stuff. And to be fair with him, there was a lot of similarities, but there would be an awful lot of differences as well. But you happily ignore those because we want to see patterns and we want to put stuff down. So I think there is perhaps a thread of truth in it, but to hang too much on it, from my point of view, I think is perhaps a little bit naive, borderline silly. However, having said that, John, I do think that your idea of using it to flesh out a character and to have them become more alive in your mind is possibly... And it hurts.
Hurts being enthusiastic, doesn't it?
It might be a really, really good idea. It could be borderline genius, John. It's a good idea. You've had a good idea.
All right.
Really good idea.
Yeah, I think it is as well, because it sort of forces you to think about aspects of your character that you wouldn't necessarily normally think about, is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you see, this is the first question I wanted to ask us and our listeners to some extent. Feel free to chime in on Twitter and stuff. And I've always thought characters, I've always been scared of them in my writing. I always felt that was one of the many bits where I fell down in the quality of my writing, was kind of the character thing. Do you need to know, and I'm not saying yes or no to this, this is a floating the question, do you need to know your characters inside out before you start? Should you know them completely, or should they surprise?
Before you even start writing,
should they surprise you and reveal as they go along, so you can be a complete plotter? And then, should you have a formed, like, absolute crystal clear thing of exactly who your character is, or are people more complex than that, and you can't do that, and they will develop and surprise as you go along?
Well.
So do you just need a few massive traits and the rest will just look after itself? Or do you need to know all the details?
No, I don't think you can know everything.
I don't think so.
I do
think that something like this is interesting or useful sort of for revealing things that you wouldn't necessarily think about. And therefore you can add a few more sort of layers and a few more... Because I did this test... for myself and for the main character in one of the things I'm writing. And it struck me that some of the questions that were asked, I was like, well, I don't know what my character thinks about that because I haven't considered
that. So it made you think, it made you actually consider them in a different situation.
But at the same time, I also, when I was doing it myself, I thought, I don't know that because I've never really considered that about myself either. So, I don't think you can ever know everything about a character, but anything that sort of reveals a... little hidden depths can't be a bad thing.
No, maybe I don't mean literally knowing that, because you can't even know everything about yourself or your spouse. Do you mean like that's not a thing, is it?
Yeah, we've talked about this before, haven't we? We've talked about the fact that we are kind of icebergs, aren't we? That we're aware of you know, a tiny part of our own sort of subconscious.
Yeah.
But understandably, there's a lot going on that we couldn't possibly answer questions about some of the things that are going on.
But I think one of the most interesting things about what we're about to do is that it's difficult to tell how accurate or how useful these things are looking at it yourself.
Mm.
I think actually what we're about to do in sharing these things, I think that'll give a much better understanding of whether they're accurate or not. Do you know what I mean? Because like you could look at something and says, oh, this says I'm a complete arsehole. That can't be right. And then I read it to you and you go, well, actually, Dave, yeah, that's they're pretty accurate there. This could get interesting.
It could get interesting.
So yeah, but back again to my point, that doesn't actually prove anything, does it? Because that is literally the outcome that you would get from Barnum statements. That's
yeah.
the point.
Yeah, I suppose so.
I think it's really interesting because I wouldn't disagree that this personality test is, you know, by no means perfect. But I think that having seen, when I was on holiday, there were 16 separate people took the test, and some of the aspects, and of course not all of them, but a lot and probably most of the aspects were fairly spot on. And, you know, there are occasionally statements that could apply to several people. I think the thing that's different, that the reason it's not a sleight of hand, it's not like fortune telling or horoscopes or whatever, is because you have literally just answered a ton of questions about yourself. So if you did it honestly, you know, your responses are going to be different to other people. They're going to point to certain aspects of your personality. I don't think that's really in question. I think that is going to happen. I think part of the problem is it's saying, here, look, there's 16 personalities and you fit one of them. And that clearly isn't ever really going to happen. But you're gonna be closer to some than others. I think that's fair to say. And like looking at the ones that we did on holiday, it seemed really evident. I think some people came out very strongly as a character. We were all like, every statement was like, yes, absolutely, 100%, that is you. And then other ones weren't quite as close. But interestingly, if you look at it, they're all on a sliding scale, aren't they? From one extreme to another. So if your personality kind of sits in the middle, it's actually really difficult for the algorithm to go, okay, you're this person and you're that person. Yeah. And I struggled with you, Dave.
What?
And I suspect maybe you struggled yourself, because I'm guessing maybe you're down the middle, but it'll be interesting to see.
Well, yeah, we'll soon find out if this is more or less useful than those tests where you see which one of the women from Sex in the City you're most like.
It's the same thing. Is that a very similar thing? Directed by the questions, but yeah, there's I think the other thing is the idea that a personality is some kind of static thing that's not influenced by what time of day you take the question, you do the question, or do you know what the...
Yes, exactly. What sort of mood you're in at that time.
Yeah, that's another variable, isn't it, to put in. But the great thing is about the idea of using it for characters in stories that you're writing is that that's less important, isn't it? Because you are, to have that brings so much confusion. Yeah. You want more clarity than that anyway. So you kind of want the more simple approach of this is what they were doing in that situation 99% of the time, not... Well, it depends if they were tired. Was it a Tuesday? Because they've got... Yeah, they were quite busy on Tuesday, so they wouldn't do... Do you mean we were taking that out of the equation a bit, so I think...
Yeah. And it partly came from reading Will Storr's book. Because he's got a little section in that about personality types and how it might be useful to think about characters in that way. And there's a bit I wanted to just read quickly from his book.
Yeah, cool.
He says, personality has a powerful influence over our theory of control. Different personalities have different go-to tactics for controlling the environment of people. Different personalities have different go-to tactics for controlling the environment of people. I thought that was very good. So it goes on to say, you know, when unexpected change threatens, some people are more likely to jump to aggression and violence, and some will flirt, and some will argue or withdraw or, you know, roll over. And it's that I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
It's really probably comes down to your flaw or your sort of flawed beliefs in the world.
Yeah, that's that fundamental worldview.
Yeah,
sort of thing,
and actually, I found going straight to the strengths and weaknesses was really interesting, because the weaknesses is obviously where all the flaws are, and I thought, yeah, that's actually quite an interesting thing to do, is run your main character through the mill, and then go straight to weaknesses. Because I think that'll tell you quite a lot about the potential flawed beliefs of your character. But anyway, we want to know how we came out.
Yeah.
And
who
what
are
sort of
we?
People we
who
are.
Who the hell are we?
Yeah. So
this is my personality. It's not ever such a strong personality, but it's me,
but it's me.
Validly. 'Cause you see, we're not free mentally to be anyone else. It's a reality, a fallacy that I could choose to be used instead of me.
I tell you what, before we start, just out of interest, I don't know how closely you fellas have looked into this, but does anyone want to have a guess at who we'll be before we answer?
Oh, God. That would... that.
Do you know enough about
would,
the...
That would require me to know the other 15 personalities other than the one that I've got written on this
other than Wanker.
That requires a level of research that I'm just not capable of, John. So
that's not.
I think, John, as soon as you finished asking the question,
that's not going to come through as a strength, is it, on your list? Heavily into research. Tom, do you want to go first?
Go first with what? Do you want me to tell you what I am?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or can I predict you?
You could try, John, couldn't you?
I could try. First of all, I thought maybe virtuoso is a bit like you. And then I reread Architect, and I thought it sounded like a description of you. So I've gone for that, Architect.
What about you, Dave?
Yeah.
Bellend.
I think you're, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I literally don't know, because I don't know what any of them are.
He hasn't even got them up in front of him, so he has no idea.
I'm working off paper here. I can't just scroll through.
Well, mine came up as Architect, John.
Ooh.
Get it.
That's very good. Very impressed with that.
Yeah, I see.
Good. Interesting.
And as I said, the most amusing thing, so after I'd said about, obviously, that, you know, I mean, you look now at the more modern interpretations of this, that a lot of clinical psychologists think it's not a very good measure of personality, and it's a bit more of a website thing, and companies still use it because they kind of sold it sort of thing and what have you. When you get down to one element of the description, skeptical by nature, Architects. Right. So I don't know. And then my brain just exploded, because that is obviously correct. But then, so that's confusing.
But it's not confusing, is it? Because you have just answered a load of questions again. It's
No, there's a lot of truth in that. Yeah.
What about your role then, Tom?
My role.
Because there's a bit where it says your personality, and then there's a bit that says your role.
Where's that bit?
Do you mean career paths?
I don't know. It just says your role. well, maybe I have done a bit more research than anybody else.
Strengths and weaknesses.
Let's hear your strengths and weaknesses. I want to hear your strengths and weaknesses. Give us a quick flick through that.
Yeah, cool. 2 seconds.
Can't rewrite it, Tom.
I'm not saying that one. Architects are rational. Pride themselves on their power of minds, blah, blah, blah. Informed, devoted to developing rational, correct, and evidence-based opinions. But everyone thinks that of themselves, surely.
Yeah,
but I'm not being funny.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying, you know, people will want to go, oh, yeah, definitely. I know what's going on. Independent, creative, and self-motivated. Oof, creative, yes. Self-motivated. Okay.
Hey, when you want to be Tom, you are, aren't you? But I suppose...
Determined? Are you saying I'm determined, John?
Yeah, I would say
I'm
that,
known
yeah.
for being ambitious and goal-orientated.
Perhaps less so. To a certain
Curious,
extent.
Original.
Yep.
This personality type's rebellious streak is responsible for some of history's most unconventional ideas and inventions.
Oh, there you go.
I'm converted.
Whoa. Putting all the crisps together.
Indicators that flash at a different resonance depending whether you're parked indicating to come out or parked with your hazard lights on.
Yeah.
This is me.
It really is you. It really is.
And anyone listening to last week's show, architects force the people around them to consider new and sometimes startling ways of looking at things. Like people inserting their hands into live animals as part of a horror film. So, yeah.
Architects can be both the boldest of dreamers and the bitterest of pessimists. I thought that's interesting.
That's pretty,
I disagree with that.
Tom, that's a pretty Tom sort of thing.
You swing from like pure pessimism
I'm never a pessimist. Never a pessimist.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Okay.
No.
Really?
Just say things as they are. Do you mean it's just, you know, maybe I'm arrogant and dismissive of emotions and overly critical and combative and socially socially clueless? Who wrote this? No, it's not. What? No, come on, that's not me. At times, they may become cynical about the value of relationships altogether, questioning the importance of love and connection. Come on. That's not me. That's not me. But no, obviously, it can't be 100% true. Right, can it? But
But it's the extreme. It's talking about the extreme version of this, you know, personality, isn't it?
Yeah, so arrogant, probably put a little tick in that box. But when you're as good as me, then, you know, fair enough, isn't it, to be arrogant? Yeah, overly critical, that is unfortunately true. But is that a weakness? It's not really a weakness, is it? That's a strength.
Well, it can be, but I think, isn't that the point?
I think the word overly is what makes it.
Oh, yeah, no, you're right there, Dave, yeah.
Isn't that the point, though, of all these things? They're all strengths and they're all weaknesses at the same time. I mean, that is what personalities are, isn't it?
Yeah, and I always had a thing, and I think, I don't think I invented it, but, is that often people's biggest strength is also their biggest weakness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would agree.
So anyway, so there I am, architect.
We should probably as well describe roughly how it works. Okay, so there are effectively sliding scales. Okay, so you've got one of the scales is from extremely extroverted to extremely introverted. That's one of your like character traits, and you'll be along that scale somewhere. The next one is intuitive to observant, and they're like opposite sides of the scale. The next opposite side of the scale are thinking or feeling, and then last one, or the last kind of proper one, is judging at one end and prospecting at the other. Not entirely sure what that means.
No,
to be honest,
I don't quite understand
but
that.
They obviously know what it
judging
means.
Judging or looking for gold. I don't really understand what that means.
So it's sort of working on, these four things with sliding scales. Looking into it a bit more, actually, because we were talking about the fact that it's effectively a take on the Myers-Briggs.
Yeah.
Or Briggs-Myers or whatever it is.
Yeah. See, this is the problem. I did the Johnny Briggs test, which only really helps.
Having read a little bit more about it, it looks like what they've done is combined effectively Myers-Briggs, made it a bit more, a little bit less polar, because I think the original Myers-Briggs was like, I answer yes or no.
It was kind of very 1960s psychology, wasn't it? It was kind of on or off.
Yeah. So this is along the scale, basically. You answer along a scale rather than yes or no, or in the middle. And they've combined it with the one that Will Storr talks about, which is called the five-factor model, or the Big Five. So they've tried to look at traits as well as types and incorporate them, all of this stuff, into one model. So I couldn't tell you whether that actually works or not. But
yeah, you see, this is where I struggled, though, because I find yes-no answers are a lot easier than, like, on a scale of, I mean, do I agree? Do I strongly agree? Do I agree a little bit? I don't know. I find it very difficult to put a figure on.
But if you can't answer, you just go in the middle, don't you?
Yeah.
That's what you do. That's what
But then you just seem really vague.
Right, can we guess what you are then, John?
Yeah, go for it.
So I've only managed to narrow it down to three, really.
Yeah.
Advocate, mediator, or possibly an adventurer.
Now, out of those, I would say...
Shall I read the descriptions, Dave?
Yeah, go on
then.
So
an advocate is quiet and mystical, yet very inspiring and tireless idealists.
Right, yeah, okay. That sounds like a... Put that in the maybe pile.
Mediator is poetic, kind, and altruistic, always eager to help a good cause.
Yeah, that's a maybe as well, yeah.
And adventurer is selfish, not very intelligent, and not very nice to be around. Always the butt of the jokes.
That's a maybe as well.
And that was my favourite. That seemed to... I know these can be generic and apply to a lot of people. That just seemed like... adventurer is flexible and charming artist, always ready to explore and experience something new.
I don't know now. I was going to say mediator.
I don't know if that further proves my point that these can kind of apply to lots of people.
Yeah.
Or whether John is just such a multifaceted, amazing person that it's difficult to put him in a single box.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that is true, isn't it?
Come on, put us out of our misery then, John.
You're absolutely right, Betty. I'm a mediator.
Ah, there we go. You
see? I did it twice as well because I thought I didn't want to be that hippie woman with the butterflies flying around. So I went and did it again and got exactly the same thing.
Did you do it again and put exactly the same answers?
I don't know, because I couldn't remember because my memory's so bad. But I obviously did. So, mediator.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Although they may seem quiet or unassuming, mediators have vibrant, passionate inner lives.
Dave, do you want to know who some other famous mediators they think have existed in time?
Yes.
Probably the most notable and relevant for this is a certain William Shakespeare.
Oh, get it.
Is it now? Ah, well, come here on. We go.
And Frodo Baggins. How did they work that one out? How they got that one? They're just making this up.
Frodo Baggins?
Has he done the test?
We have just fallen for this.
When did he do the test? I don't remember that chapter.
I think it was just after Fox Mulder from The X-Files, because he's also on your list.
What?
Yeah.
Crikey.
But William Shakespeare, do you know what I mean? One of your...
Well, yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I did see... What did I read? Oh, yeah. I read in one bit. I thought it was quite interesting. Certain careers and vocations seem to hold a special allure for these personalities. With their curiosity and their love of self-expression, many mediators dream of becoming writers. They might write novels. That's quite weird.
That's quite
specific, isn't it?
Quite on the nose, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You, my dear, dear friend, are listening to The Failing Writers. Why? I have no idea. But please don't think about it too hard. Just keep listening. Please.
Now, I think we've got the tricky one coming up now, because we've got Birdie.
The elusive Birdie.
Wow, wow.
And I'm not saying that you're low on personality, Birdie.
Well, you sort of are saying
no,
that. But
no, what I'm saying is I suspect, and I could be totally wrong, but I suspect you sit quite close to the middle. Like, you're a moderate person. Not in every way.
Right.
But in some respects. Okay. In personality, you're not out on the fringes of, extremity of character.
I don't think you're going to get this then.
Yeah.
I think there's an interesting little caveat though, isn't it? When you're actually doing it for real people. And this is an interesting thing to talk about character as well. That the sort of person that you portray to other people can often be very different. If you really answer honestly, the answers can be very, very different to what other people might sort of expect from you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that should be the point, shouldn't it? But interestingly, like with mine, I was almost in the middle with extroverted and introverted, very slightly more introverted. With the thinking and feeling, I was very slightly more feeling, but really close to the middle. And also with judging and prospecting, I was like 51%, 49%. So it wasn't like an extreme version of this. It was only the intuitive observant. I was like 80-20.
Otherwise, you're really average.
I'm very, no, exactly. I do.
But so you could get two very different kinds of people that were both mediators.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What, do you mean like one could be amped up to the max and everything, whereas one is more middling?
And this partly comes down to what you were saying before, Tommy, about it sort of slightly depends on the mood you're in when you answer the questions. Because if I was
I think it really does.
Because those things are so close. If I was in a slightly different mood, I might have answered one of those questions differently and I might be something else now.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But interestingly, I was the same thing twice.
But what are we going to put, Dave? What box are we going to ram Dave into?
I plumped for Campaigner.
Campaigner was what came up to me, I have to say, just now, looking through them.
It didn't really sound like you looking through it, but it sounded more like you than a lot of the other things.
I would have gone Campaigner. If I had to pick one, I would have gone for Campaigner. Mm.
That is interesting, because it's completely wrong.
Well, I think maybe you need to redo the test, Dave. So if we both said that, then maybe you're answering the questions wrong.
Do you know what is actually really interesting, though? Well, I don't know if this is interesting. Mm. It might be interesting. when I did my sort of main character from the book that I'm writing,
oh yeah,
she came out as a campaigner.
Ooh, and you really fancy
her. I do, yeah. So maybe that's maybe I aspire to be a campaigner. Maybe I portray the image of a campaigner, but no,
deep down inside,
according to the Johnny Briggs test, I am not a campaigner. Do you want to know what it came out as?
Yes, please.
Well, my other guest was an architect.
Well, there you go. I am, according to this, a turbulent architect.
Ah, two architects. Yeah. Look at that. I can see that. I can see that.
Do you know what? I think I might have been slightly converted by this. I don't know if I've just been... I'm not sure whether I've just been confuddled by the Barnum effect or whether it is happening now. I'm in a bit of a quandary, whether I've just been conned or whether I really am talking to my dead Auntie Margaret.
Well, there's just some bits of this that I thought were sort of quite... I think they're quite sort of true. It says, turbulent architects are introverted, intuitive, thinking, judging, and turbulent. Which, okay, right. But these thoughtful tacticians love perfecting the details of life, applying creativity and rationality.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm an analyst as well. And I was asking you about your role,
yeah.
Tom. According to this, it says my role is an analyst.
Ah, okay.
It says analysts in...
What does that mean? I can't find that.
I don't know. It's just on the... Bit
that's missing from
printed out. Personality traits. Analysts embrace rationality and impartiality. And I think I kind of do a lot. I tend to sit
on
the fence quite a bit, be impartial, but try to be rational. And fiercely independent, open-minded, strong-willed. I'm not really strong-willed.
What about this bit, though, Dave? They are proof that seeking out life's joys and pleasures isn't the same as being shallow. Seemingly in the blink of an eye, people with this personality type can transform from impassioned idealists to carefree figures on the dance floor.
That was the bit that I plucked out. What's that in? Is that in Campaigner?
That is in Campaigner. I was just trying to see whether it's still...
I was going to say, I was thinking, is that in Architect as well? In that case, this is a load of bull. It's just the same. It's the same script for everybody.
No, you say that. There is actually a psychological study where they did that.
Yeah, and everyone nodded and went,
where they gave everyone the same generic guff.
Yeah.
After, I think it was after doing a personality type thing. And everyone was going, oh, yeah. Oh, that's me. Oh, wow, they've got this spot on.
Don't you think, though, that this seems to pin its colours a bit more? It's not as vague as I thought it was going to be. I mean, some of it is, don't get me wrong. There's the odd line that's like, you like being silly sometimes. But other times you feel happy.
That's me. Like that. I like standing up sometimes. And sometimes I sit down, I do.
But some of it's really specific.
But then... Again, to be put the cynical hat back on, part of being, if you watch a really good cold reader, that's how they get people to, they have stuff that sounds like it should be really specific.
Yeah, but they have someone at the other end nodding or shaking their head.
Yeah, no, I get that, but it's the same thing. I just think it's fascinating. I'm not saying it's wrong or not. I just think it's a massively fascinating, in the same way you'll enjoy watching Derren Brown on TV, knowing that it's all made up, but it is fascinating, and you struggle not to believe some of it, even though you're told that it's not real.
Yeah, but I find it even weirder. I'm doing it now, and I think we've all done it, is that even within this, you read a sentence out which gives a number of different characteristics, and even in your voice, you just put emphasis on certain ones and skip over
He's
other ones.
He's funny, tedious, and annoying. Oh, yeah, it's me, that. Yeah, no, definitely.
Anyway, I think it's quite good to think about yourself to a certain extent. To look at yourself kind of objectively, like even if it's not entirely true, or maybe this is all bollocks, but I think it can be quite useful.
But it does. But part of the point is it doesn't matter. It doesn't actually matter if it is all bollocks.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. It's like you're looking. Yeah. It forces you just to turn a mirror on yourself, have a little look, and go, okay, that is quite interesting. Maybe
hey,
I
Dave,
am.
Hey, Dave, have you heard all this media?
Yeah, I know,
coming out
always
with.
In the middle. Of it could be good, or it could be not good. Let's not judge it too harshly.
Not. Let's just try and
but,
help everyone.
But, it's true that like the good thing about it, particularly to bring it back round to thinking about character, is it forces you to sort of think about certain things and make choices. And you might, even if you agree with it or disagree with it, it's kind of like flipping a coin in and saying, right, if it's heads, I'm going to eat a sandwich. And if it's tails, I'm going to eat some porridge. And then it lands on porridge and it makes you go.
I'll tell you what, Dave, you do know how to live.
I really do, yeah. This is every lunchtime. But like if you flip the coin and it comes down on porridge and then you go, oh, do you know what? I don't like porridge. I'm not going to have that. I'm going to have a sandwich anyway. But it forces you to make that decision. So sometimes you know, putting those things out there makes you make those choices.
So I've got a question for you. If you fellas were characters in a novel, right? And we're talking about flaws here because this is what the writer is looking for. They're looking for your interesting flaw, the interesting way that you view the world that's different to other people that maybe gives you your flaw. What would the writer focus in on? And what genre would you best fit in, do you think? So you're a character in something. What's your flaw? What would it be?
You just asked a massive question there, John, haven't you?
It's a big question, yeah.
That's quite a two-part question. The second part of that question is quite tricky. I think the first part is indecisiveness. No, I think the first part is a sort of deeply hidden, well, not hidden, but deeply sort of held belief that nothing really matters. So what's the bloody point?
Oh, that's quite.
I think that would be my sort of flaw. That sort of
stop nihilist.
Yeah, even when I get enthusiastic about something, there's always a bit of me that goes, blah, what's the point?
Well, that'll be fun until the inevitable heat death of the universe.
Exactly. Yeah. We're going to die anyway, so who cares? So I guess
and
that's the sort
what
of
would that flaw. Character fit well
oh,
into?
I don't know. That's the difficult part, isn't it? What genre?
Make it good.
Well, what would need to happen in the stories for that to be completely spun on its head, isn't it? So you're looking at what would resolve that in terms of...
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I think...
It'd have to be something where the stakes were incredibly high.
I think like a Saving the World Independence Day type thing, isn't it? Well, that's what happened in Independence Day, isn't it? The guy that was the hero.
He'd given up, hadn't he?
The drunken pilot fella.
Yeah.
That's you,
yeah,
Dave,
getting
right?
probed. That's me getting probed by aliens.
But then sacrificing everything, realising that everything does matter.
Wow, that's exactly.
But also sacrificing
does
yourself.
Does it to
in
save
the
his kids, yeah. doesn't he? That's
so Dave thing. Would be in quite a bad millennial sci-fi.
Okay. I would be an alcoholic alien sexual abuse victim in a sci-fi. Yeah.
I think I'd be a good like British farce character because I'd be very over worried about I'd be like too easily heartbroken and too afraid of confrontation.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I wouldn't want to offend people.
Yeah, that's true.
So my character, I would contort myself to make sure everybody's happy and nobody's falling out, even to the extent of like getting myself into, you know, all kinds
Bother.
Of complicated farcical situations. I'd be trying to be in two places at once and telling
you've already been cast. Hugh Grant has already been cast
yes.
in this role, John.
Yeah. No, I can see you in like a sort of 70s, a gentle 70s sitcom.
A classic farce, yeah.
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 We just keep trying to keep
it. That would work for me. What about you, Tommy?
I don't know, really. I think maybe the idea of having a lot of potential but not being willing to take risks to unearth it.
That's quite good.
Joying of kind of staying in your lane a little bit too much, despite perhaps having something more
to offer.
That's
a good flaw.
Do you know what I mean? I should have written that letter to all the major motor manufacturers years ago about the hazard lights.
Yeah.
Too late now, isn't it?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I just haven't. I've just sat on it. Yeah. Just sat on it. I did write a letter to Walkers about the idea of crispness dinner, and I've not heard anything back at all.
Yeah. So that's a good one. We like that one.
That would, do you mean that would take the wind out of anyone's sails, wouldn't it?
That's true.
So in terms of what kind of story that would, what genre that would fit into, it has to be something where someone's kind of overlooked, but kind of has potential, but stays in the little leagues kind of thing, wouldn't it? Mm. Like a small town doctor or
it's like it's a drama, isn't it? It's like
or maybe like a sporting type thing. Or
nice. Yeah.
Or maybe even like an old. What about an old
a maverick running a sports team? And
I was thinking, what about an old wartime escape film kind of thing?
Oh yeah, That's good.
So you're just kind of in there and you're doing your job and you're kind of, yeah, he's all right and stuff. But then when push comes to shove, actually you do need to stand up and be counted. And your your brains or your ideas or whatever, or whatever you do, you mean you've got to...
You'd really suit one of those moustaches as well. Do you know what I mean? Really beautifully waxed.
That's true. What about like a Goodwill Hunting sort of thing? You know, big potential, but stuck in a sort of small town, not willing to push himself on to achieve stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not your fault, Tom.
Yeah.
It's not your fault, Tom.
Yeah. God, it's quite deep, isn't it?
Hello, and welcome back to Tools and Their Trades. Now it's time to open the box and welcome our next set of tools.
Hi, I'm Tom.
And I'm Dave.
So what are your trades, lads?
I'm a writer, actually.
Fishmonger.
And now that all-important question, what are your tools?
Well, recently I've been using Scrivener.
Fish knife.
So what's so good about Scrivener, Tom?
It's designed from a writer's point of view, so it's built start to finish to make writing a novel more manageable.
Oh, yeah.
My knife's really sharp.
You can add notes and research right there alongside your work so you can plan every detail before you start writing.
Right.
Or you can just pants it and then rearrange stuff as you go.
But the handle's not sharp, so you can hold it without cutting your fingers off.
Right. And how easy is it to get hold of these tools?
Just go to literatureandlatte.com and you can download a free 30-day trial.
Just go to a knife shop and tell them you're not a threat to society anymore.
And then, if you like it, you can get 20% off the full version using the code FAILING. It really is everything you need to finally write that novel.
And this really is everything you need to finally gut that fish. Apart from the fish. You still need a fish. Without a fish, the fish knife is useless. And I don't even like fish. What am I doing here, man?
Well, there we go. I think it's safe to say this week's tool of the week is Scrivener. Download your free trial now at literatureandlatte.com. And don't forget that 20% off using the code FAILING.
Yeah, are you sure the tool of the week isn't Dave?
Does anyone want to buy a knife?
Anyway, so... we've talked about ourselves.
Yeah.
Did we all run a character through this test?
Yeah, characters. Yeah, when I was thinking, because obviously, I mean, the importance of that is the same as a lot of stuff, isn't it, in stories? That any deviation from their personality has to be for a really good reason that fits in with the story. Mm. Otherwise, you've popped the bubble, haven't you?
Yeah.
Of suspending disbelief while you're reading something or watching something. Whatever.
Yeah.
Just giving a bit more depth, isn't it? I think it's easy to end up with slightly two-dimensional characters. I think you said in your book, didn't you, Dave, that you felt...
Some
of the bags of meat you were talking about.
Yeah, some of the kind of the extras, if you like, the second-tier characters were just a bit too, they're the angry one. You know, that's it.
Yeah.
So who did you put through the mill, Davey?
Ruby. I was going to do Bobby Brown, but I thought, it's just...
I'm glad you went for Ruby.
Not the best idea. So, yeah, Ruby, the main character from the stand-up comedy-based murder mystery novel that I was writing last year.
And before you run through it, did she end up different to what you thought going in, or did it just kind of... were there any surprises?
Not massively, because I don't have a huge amount of information here. I've got less here than I thought I had. Do you know what? I really must move on from paper one day, because... I got the conclusion here is that it came out that she was, as I said, a campaigner.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And it says few personality types are as creative and charismatic as campaigners. Known for their idealism and enthusiasm, these personalities excel at dealing with unexpected challenges and brighten the lives of those around them. And I thought that's pretty kind of on the nose for Ruby. But it also said, when it comes to building relationships, choosing a career, or turning their dreams into reality, people with this personality type may need to consciously address their weaknesses. And this whole thing, the whole story is about her wanting to have one career and getting stuck in something else and not being able to make that kind of change. So, yeah, that was sort of interesting.
When it comes to her big personality flaw of the book, Does she have one, first of all? Because it potentially, if you don't have a classic character arc because it's a detective book, does she have one?
Yeah, I was trying to remember because it's quite a long time. I haven't read it since the end of November. But her big sort of flaw was that it was a bit like what you were saying, Thomas, like having this kind of dream and this potential, but not sort of pursuing that instead. And then also a little bit like you, John, like being too desperate to please others, being too desperate to please her dad to follow her own dream.
And do they come up in the list of flaws or weaknesses? Could you read them out? Read out her weaknesses. Have you got them there?
Oh, God, what a mess. Am I supposed to find anything here? This is just ridiculous. Why is there paper everywhere? Got it. Yes, I can, John.
Excellent.
So, strengths. Campaigners are curious. They can find beauty and fascination in nearly anything. Imaginative and open-minded. They aren't afraid to venture beyond their comfort zone. That bit doesn't quite fit. Because that's the whole point, is that she can't sort of get out of her comfort zone.
But then part of that is who she should become, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to develop that flaw throughout and address it, and that's the story arc.
Yeah, well,
if she's a detective and a comedian, presumably she's quite perceptive.
Yeah, that's the kind of interesting thing, isn't it? Is like when you look at these sort of things, they're not kind of definite things about that person, but it kind of makes you question as to whether they are that or not. It makes you think about it. Excellent communicators. It says as a strength.
You see, I think this is where this becomes really, really useful. Almost to have post-it notes with just those key words. You're not being overt about the personality, but you're just making sure that you're hitting these almost like beats in the personality, isn't it? Like you'd have for a story.
Yeah, key points, isn't it?
You're kind of doing the right moves.
That's right, yeah. If you've got a few
staying
sort of key
in character,
words.
Yeah, I exactly. Guess someone could invent that phrase for it, couldn't they?
Yeah, like, but it's having those sort of like those little key words, like you said, so that when somebody asks your character a question, you can refer to and think, oh, they're an enthusiastic person. Mm. They would reply to that enthusiastically.
Because it gives them a tone of voice as well, doesn't it?
I'm not quite sure why festive is down as a strength.
What's that mean?
Christmas? I don't know what that means.
Maybe they like surprise parties, Dave. No wonder you didn't come up in that one.
Yeah, that's true.
That must be it.
No wonder you weren't.
Well, it does say these personalities know how to find fun and joy in the present moment.
Let's look at weaknesses.
Yes.
People pleasing. So as we were saying about her, like, you know, just trying to sort of make her dad proud rather than following her own dream.
Yeah.
Unfocused and disorganized. And one of the things that I sort of had about her is that she was always late to everything, which I think kind of comes basically because she's doing something that she's not really interested in. And it's hard to make yourself be organized about something when you don't really care about it that much. Overly optimistic, it says here. Not sure about that. Oh, but it does say campaigners have a rosy outlook. And her name is Ruby. Ruby, Rosie, similar kind of
thing. Change it to Rosie. Job done.
Yeah, change it to Rosie. Rosie Brown. it doesn't really, not really giving me much, this, in terms of weaknesses. But, I'm not sure how useful that is,
to be honest. It's not necessarily adding any.
What were you saying earlier about Dave just sitting on the fence and being in the middle of everything?
But I think you're right. I think you're right with your analysis there, Tom. It's more about the sort of headlines, isn't it?
I think so. I think those kind of bullet points are just keeping you on the straight and narrow. So you're not. It's that thing, just so you're not wandering off. Because if you're writing a novel, it's a long old time, and you want any drift to be intentional, don't you? To be a product of what is actually happening, not just you not really concentrating.
Yeah, and I think that would definitely be one of my other character flaws, is an inability to stay focused. So maybe I do fit into the campaigner category. So it's having any little things like that just keep referring you back to what you're supposed to be doing. I feel like I could do, you know, those blinkers that you get on horses. I could really do with some of them.
Yeah, I think we all struggle with that.
Just Dave, invent some. If I saw something that belongs on Dragon's Den, that is it.
Or there's a story of, you know, Steve Davis, the famous snooker player from the 80s. when he was sort of training, he had this sort of practice routine where he would just hit the white up and down the spots down the middle of the table. And he would sort of focus on doing that and keeping his head still. And to help him, his dad would stand behind him with a cue. And every time his head moved, his dad would hit him on the head with a cue just to sort of keep him focused. I feel like I could do with that. Yeah. I could do a Steve Davis's dad standing behind me with a stick.
No, I'm not suggesting that going on Dragon's Den and having like one of those big revealing cloths over something and going, right, what have you got for us? Right, well, I've got, pulls cloth down, reveals Steve Davis's dad.
And a stick. And have you patented this, Dave? No, not yet.
I haven't. No, not yet. Well, there'll be lots of other people getting Steve Davis's dads out with sticks. Yeah. So it's not something I can invest in. You can't protect it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm out.
For that reason, I'm out. Cool. Well done, Dave.
Well, there we go. That's my analysis for what it's worth.
Do you know, I thought this, for me, I thought this would be really interesting, especially seeing as both you have read the first draft of Chad Nadsworthy's 2-Hour Sales Bible.
Ah, yeah.
I thought it would actually be, initially when John suggested it, I went, oh, well, no point to it. And I thought, actually, no. This would actually be quite fun to do, Chad, wouldn't it? To see what comes up.
I'm very excited about hearing about Chad.
Dave and John, can you guess?
Hang on, before you say it, we should just point out what the hell we're talking about. If you go to season 2, episode 7, you can listen to what we're talking about.
Yeah.
This is Tom's, what are we calling it?
Pastiche Self-Help Sales Book.
There you go.
Starring Chad Nadsworthy, the world's best salesperson ever, according to him. So he's quite, he's a narcissist. He's belligerent. He's full of himself. He doesn't care about other people. He's like really, he's on the edge of, you get a personality trait, he's going to be like teetering on the brink of as far as gone as possible. So out of all these multitude of, personality types, where do you guys think he might sit?
Well, I couldn't imagine he could be anything but a commander.
Interesting.
I don't think he's going to fit into the diplomat.
Looked around.
Area, is he?
No.
I'm really hoping it's not an architect. But I'm going to go commander, because you start reading commander, it's like, yeah, that's him. Commanders are dominant, relentless, and unforgiving. This isn't because they're cold-hearted or vicious per se.
I like that.
I don't know. He might be one of the explorer types. He might come out as like a virtuoso,
like entrepreneur.
An entrepreneur, yeah. Mm.
Well, he did indeed come out as an entrepreneur.
You see
what?
Yeah, because he is very similar to both Eddie Murphy and Madonna. Also entrepreneurs.
That's brilliant.
But I think the funniest thing for me, and hey, what I did actually was I did the quiz as Chad. So I answered it as Chad would answer it, because that's what we do when we do ours.
Yeah, I see what you mean. And then you did it as you know Chad to be.
And then I did it as I know the underneath Chad of what is actual.
Yeah, this is how Chad would answer it.
Yeah, because yes, I mean, that's not something we got to do for ourselves, because we can't, because we are we are ourselves. Yeah. I think I'm right in saying that.
I think you should be right there, Tom.
We are ourselves.
Yeah.
So what was the difference?
They were both entrepreneurs.
Oh.
Whoa.
But would you...
Okay, so he's a very honest guy as
Would you like to guess, when Chad did Chad, what percentage extrovert he was?
I'm guessing very high.
Yeah. 90.8%.
Where was the missing two?
I have no idea what he missed out on. But some of the questions, were just brilliant. I thought one of them was like... I mean, to be fair, actually, no, one of them was, you take great care not to make people look bad, even when it's their fault. And Chad Nadsworthy would just be like, what? I don't give a shit.
I think he would see it as his duty to point it out.
But then
he?
I thought, that's a weird question, because could anyone be that much of a Chad Nadsworthy that when they're answering the quiz, they would honestly go, oh, yeah, no, I'm not bothered.
I don't know, I can think of a couple of people.
Well, maybe they would. Maybe I'm just being... naive, because I think that's a terrible thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. As I think,
I think I can think of people.
But having said that, that's one of those questions where you think, well, what's the circumstance?
Well, yeah.
If that man there has just murdered that small child, then I'm happy for him to look bad. Mm. And it's his fault. That's fine.
Yeah, it's a very generic.
But do you know what I mean? If an old lady's broken wind in a lift, I'll take the knock for it.
Yeah, no, but but some people, I know some people who think that, like, making people look bad for their mistakes is going to help them. Is that they're doing it for other people, you know?
Yeah, and that is a bit of a Chad-worthy thing, isn't it? In it, you know, if you take it to the nth degree, that kind of, well, it's for their own good. It's the only way they'll learn. Yeah, but and would you pass on a good opportunity if you thought someone else needed it more? And there's literally a bit in the book where Chad Nadworthy argues exactly the opposite, as if it was the most right-minded thing in the world to do. So yeah, no, I thought it was very entertaining. But yeah, entrepreneur, which does kind of fit, even if...
Yeah, looking at it now.
Well, I just think in the sense of entrepreneur, Daniel, regardless of what it says in there, what you would bring to your meaning of entrepreneur, he is that, isn't he? He's just a go-getter and will step on anyone else to get where he's going, and has a ridiculous, completely misplaced self-belief. Do you mean it's just bulletproof? Completely bulletproof. Like absolute first-class narcissist, so...
Mm. Interesting.
Very good. So I ran a character through this that neither of you guys would know about, so it's probably not that interesting, but it was interesting for me. He's a sort of curmudgeonly Yorkshire cop, but he's working down south, and a lot of the people, he's very working class, and a lot of the people that he comes up against are very upper class, or very, very sort of upper middle class. And he makes it fairly obvious that he's not very keen on those people.
Sounds like an architect.
He came out as a virtuoso. Right. And I don't think I know any virtuoso.
Bold and practical experimenters, masters of all kinds of tools.
Yeah. So running through strengths and weaknesses.
So did this surprise you then? Was this a bit of a curveball for you?
No, there were only a couple of things that I wouldn't have described him like that. He's not massively optimistic. He's not actually pessimistic, but he's you wouldn't describe him as super optimistic. He is quite energetic. He's creative and practical. He is spontaneous and rational. It says, knows how to prioritize. Yeah? Yeah, fair enough. Good in a crisis. He is good in a crisis. And he is definitely relaxed. Like, he's not...
Not stressing.
Yeah, he doesn't worry too much about the moment. Goes with the flow. He's stubborn. These are the weaknesses. He's stubborn. Yep, definitely. Insensitive. Yep, definitely. Private and reserved. Absolutely. Easily bored. Probably, yeah. He dislikes commitment. On the whole. And risky behaviour. Risky behaviour.
Now, you see, I'm back to thinking this is all nonsense now, because I fitted into like 3 out of 4 of those weaknesses like a glove. Oh, John!
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking that as well.
But interestingly, again, what are you? ISTP, right? So... Yeah, so you're an I and a T. Right. So, yeah, that sort of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, so not...
So, yeah. But, yeah, I thought it was quite interesting. And I, like, reading further through all the other, you know, bumf about romantic relationships and friendships and stuff like that, some of it I thought might be quite useful to kind of flesh him out a little
bit. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the stuff that you wouldn't necessarily think of to perceive within his character. You think, actually, yeah, I could give... So I guess my question on this then would be, with the like the headline stuff, like you're saying about him not being an optimist, and this obviously says that he should be an optimist, inverted commas, would you consider changing that then, or do you stick to what is in there already, what you've already...
I don't think it's actually... It's probably not that relevant to him, because it's not like he's a pessimist. He's not the opposite.
Right, okay,
of
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If he was the opposite of it, I might go, oh, does that work?
So we spent like an hour or whatever doing all this, and you're not going to actually use it to change anything. Is that what you're saying?
No, that's what I was saying. I think there are things in there that I need to think about it, because I only did it today.
Yeah, but, yeah, yeah.
Might help to flesh him out. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
I think that's the point, isn't it? It encourages you to think about these things.
Yeah,
that's it.
You know, and
exactly that.
It's
yeah.
no more or less than that, really.
Well, no, it's almost back to the bullet points on the post-it notes, isn't it? That it's there for future. If you write those things down, then as the story progresses, it's there in front of you. It's front and center for you to think. Oh, actually, no, hold on a minute. He wouldn't. He would be. If he had to swing one way or the other, he probably would be optimistic about it rather than be a grumpy Yorkshireman and going the other way. Actually stick to what's true to him. Yeah, could be some help in that.
How much of your character, when you're writing a character, how much do you use existing people? You're obviously, whenever you're writing characters, you're drawing from your experience because you don't have anything else, but do you ever kind of cast people in your characters, Dave? Like, what's her name? Ruby? Rosie? What was her name?
Ruby. No, well...
Do you see her as somebody, or is she definitely her own person? Do you know what I mean?
She's definitely her own person. I think I said this before. She's one of the... Because I think that's something that I'm not particularly good at, is sort of character. So I've done things before where I've kind of been writing something and I sort of did a little sort of image search online and tried to find a sort of picture of someone that I thought might look a bit like that person, and then sort of stuck something on the wall with a few bullet points just to kind of remind me of who that character is, so it stays consistent. I've tried that before, but I still sort of find it difficult to like inhabit. I don't know if this is a sort of trait of an architect, but it's difficult to inhabit somebody else's skin. Mm. But with Ruby, it was totally different. She just sort of came fully formed.
Wow.
Like, and it was the first time that's ever happened that I just sort of, this character sort of arrived and all this stuff just started coming out. So, she's a sort of an anomaly.
It's
really
weird, isn't it? And it's not a particular person that you know either.
No, not at all. Yeah, and she's definitely not me. She's not like a female me, which is sort of something that often happens, I think, when you're writing in a character. You start writing someone that you think is someone else and then you realise, oh, no, it's just me with a funny hat on and a different name.
with a wig on.
It's me in a dress. But no, this is just a completely separate and new person, which I think was why I found it so easy to write as much as I did of that book.
Is it your perfect woman?
She might be, yeah.
Have you written your perfect woman?
I might have done, yeah, by complete accident, yeah.
Do you think it's okay to take someone that you actually know and just put them into your book wholesale? Obviously, minus the name, presumably.
I don't think you can do that, can you, really? I think, well, whatever you do, it's still going to be your perception of that person, isn't it? It's not the actual person.
That's true, yeah. It's not actually them.
Yeah, it's your take on them. Mm. So you're probably at best taking 75% of them, aren't you? Do you mean worst case scenario? Mm. So no, I think you can in that sense.
I think we do it a lot without thinking, and like ramped up versions.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you probably absorb bits of different things, don't you? And I mean, in something like the sales Bible with Chad, obviously he's just an amalgam of lots of different salespeople and sales trainers, but ramped up to 11. Do you mean that's kind of a...
Yeah.
So it's a bit more extreme and a bit more caricature, isn't it, than character in places.
Yeah.
But with something in a novel, with the thing I've got coming up on the boil, I think it's about taking... You've got to take lots of different bits, haven't you? Bits of yourself, bits of people you know, bits of people you're close to, bits of people you work to. And actually the real art of bringing good characters is taking lots of little bits and moulding them together to become a separate entity that you feel... and the readers feel exists.
But that still hangs together, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And again, that's where this 16 personalities nonsense actually comes into its own, isn't it? That it is a proper check, isn't it? Like a check and balance about, you could put the wrong bits of a character together and end up with someone that just doesn't make sense, really. Do you mean it's a bit too weird? That's not right. And I think as humans, as social animals, we can sense that, can't we? We know what goes together.
Yeah, if someone was incredibly logical and at the same time incredibly emotional, then we go...
And that same person was really caring and always trying to help people, but at the same... Do you mean it's... and but wasn't, and then it's like, hey?
Yeah.
It just... I think this is really good belts and braces for catching the mistakes and that sort of stuff and keeping you on, keeping you on the straight and
narrow. Keeping things consistent,
There was an article on the Readsy blog about character development. And it was quite good. It mentioned all the things that you'd expect. But At the end, there was a section titled Steer Clear of the Biggest Character Development Mistake. And I was like, oh, what can that be?
What is that then?
What is that? Come on,
what
tell me.
What is it?
And so I thought I'd throw it out to Twitter and see what came up.
Well, that's the best place to go looking for a rational response
question, isn't it? I thought it'd be interesting to see what people thought about that. And Scott Manley Hadley said, well, in real life, the biggest character development mistake is deciding that empathy is impractical. I thought that was quite good. But on the page, probably attempts to subvert stereotypes, i.e. using a stereotype, but pretending it's not a stereotype just by giving it a little twist. So there's that.
I like the twist that makes no sense. Salisbury writer said, the twist that makes no sense. An arsehole that's been an arsehole for 250 pages suddenly flips into Mr. Nice Guy with no warning or prior hint that it might happen. Yeah, he said, I would give you a literary example, but all I can think about is Darth Vader.
It's a fair point, that, so, isn't it?
And the whole Darth Vader thing just completely hinged on the fact that there was some good inside him.
And Luke could sense
it. Well, it's not been massively prominent up to then, has it? I mean, it's been quite well hidden. All of a sudden it comes bursting out and it's a complete 180 change.
See, I find it difficult talking about Star Wars because we've been planning having a sort of episode about plot holes and stuff, haven't we?
Yeah.
And there's just... Star Wars is riddled with them. Let's just put it that way. Particularly when he started messing about with making other films. But let's leave that for another day.
Yeah.
Shall we? Because
yeah.
I can feel myself getting angry.
I'm boiling over here.
And the bearded quill that said, action without reason. So even the most vile or crazed character must be true to their own ideals.
Yeah, you see, that's good.
As a wise man said, everyone is the hero of their own story. So yeah, I think we briefly talked about that before, didn't we, today? Just how, you can't be trotting on one path and then just because you need it in your story. They suddenly do something really kind for someone.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's literally no reason in the story. There's no reason for that to happen other than just to further where you want the story to go. And it's kind of that's what breaks the magic, isn't it, of a story, really?
It's interesting. Those examples are kind of about bad guys as well. I think it's probably more common that bad guys aren't particularly well fleshed out than good guys.
Yes, they're just
bad. Guys have to be really well fleshed
out. Just bad.
Out.
They're just bad.
Yeah.
And that you need more than that, don't you?
Yeah, we want to know why you're bad. They always make the best films, don't they? When you can sort of see where they're coming from. You can see why they've slaughtered half of the world.
Yeah, you kind of nearly agree with them, but you don't because they're bad.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I've got one here, Joe Clark. Not writing the character in the first place because you're too worried about how to develop them.
I think that's the most failing writer's one, isn't it?
We have a winner!
Pretty bang on.
But anyway, that won't be a problem for anyone now, will it? Now we've done that.
Well, exactly.
That is literally completely sorted, writing characters full stop forever.
We've cleared it.
Yeah. I mean, we've pretty much written people's stories for them, basically, haven't we? So,
By the way, do you want to know what it said in the blog? What the biggest character development mistake actually is?
Go on,
was the answer to the question?
Don't make your character too perfect. Simple as that. The flaw is the thing.
Well, yes.
Which would chime very well with everything we learned from Will Storr and what we've learned today.
Yeah.
So we'll put some links on the bottom of the our notes today so that you can have a go at your online personality
test.
Yeah,
let us know what you get.
Yeah. Yes. Have a little look at yourself in the mirror. Yeah.
Or do you work in progress characters as well? That is a really interesting one to do. Really interesting.
Yeah, and your bad guys.
Yeah.
And people you work with, and just anyone you meet. The woman behind the counter at the post office. Anyone.
I think the more you do it, the more you realise there's definitely something in it.
Or is there?
Wow. Find out for yourselves.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And don't forget to enter our 500-word love story competition.
Yeah, absolutely. In association with the fantastic people at Scrivener.
Thank you, Scrivener.
And if there are any bad characters in any of the stories we get now, well, you've only got yourself to blame.
They better be well fleshed out. I'll tell you that much, David.
Yes.
They better be well fleshed out. Yeah, cool. And next week, we are learning more stuff. We are talking to... Evan.
Evan knows who we're talking to?
Well, that's normally us, isn't it? But no, we do actually know this time. Evan S. Smith.
We have mentioned Evan S. Smith before when we were talking about Poker Night, because I had read his book and was sharing some of his hot tips on the podcast. Uh-huh. But it'll be nice to talk to him in the flesh.
It'd be nice for him to slip his hot tips straight into our ears, wouldn't it?
Yes. And hopefully, having heard his hot hit tips... Hopefully, having heard his hot tips, we can take them and put them to use, getting on with writing the bloody sitcom that we're supposed to be writing, eh?
Oh, yeah, because we are supposed to be doing that, aren't we?
Yeah.
We should get around to that.
Yeah.
We should.
But for now, dear listeners, I reckon it's time for bed.
Yep, thank you very much for listening.
Yes, thank you.
Do leave a review, tell other people how amazing this podcast is, and we will see you next week.
Yeah, but seriously, we do appreciate your ongoing listenership and support. You are great.
You are such a bloody mediator, John.
Please like me.
Really is, isn't he? Right.
Tatty bye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Where's everybody gone?